You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter, uber prepared on this Thursday morning. This is Nick Wright.
Good morning, CC. How are you doing, brother? Fun show yesterday. Good morning, Jenna.
Good morning, Nick.
What? Bring up the watch. I'm going to cut your hair off.
What?
Too late.
Man,
we had a lot of commentary
on that watch. People responded to that segment yesterday.
Yeah, there's a lot of idiots out there. Yeah, absolutely.
I love that philosophy.
Yeah, we got to say hi to our guy, Lucas, behind the scenes. Guy works on the show hard. It's his birthday today. Happy birthday,
happy
dog.
Happy birthday, Lucas.
Yeah, yeah. He's sitting back there embarrassed and everything.
Birthday shout-outs. I like it.
I don't care. Mr. Tickles, let's go.
We got a great show for you today on this Thursday. The newest chief is blown away by his team's offense. Big Ben is gearing up for Seattle's defense. We got to start with the Dallas Cowboys. First time, long time, we can talk Ezekiel Elliott without talking Cabo, without talking contracts. The Cowboys had Zeke back in the lineup for game one, but certainly didn't need him as Dak Prescott mopped the floor with the Giants. Zeke rushed the ball just 13 times in an attempt to ease him back into that offense. But this week against Washington, the all-pro back says he's ready for the full workload.
Didn't get used to close to the normal workload, so I had a couple bruises, but I felt pretty fresh.
How close you ready to maybe a normal workload this week?
I'm thinking I'm ready now for a normal workload. It just depends on how GB and Kellen and Coach Garrett are feeling on Sunday, but if they ask me, I'll be able to go out there and do it.
All right, CC, Kellen Moore put together a great game plan for the Cowboys mm-hmm. this past Sunday, one that really let Dak Prescott shine and didn't rely, obviously, heavily on mm-hmm. Ezekiel Elliott. Do you expect a full workload for Zeke after only 13 carries in his first game?
This is what I would like to do with Dallas. I believe Dallas is in a unique situation, and very, very few times can a team change their characteristics. And because of Zeke, because he missed the camp, and because the holdout, and he would like to think, yeah, now I'm on my second week of practice, I'm ready for a full load. Well, no, you're not. I would take it and look at the schedule. I've been trained by the NFL. I'm going week to week, but I'm in TV now.
Yeah.
I can forecast.
Yeah.
And the reason why, you don't know Zeke's going to hold out, but also, you don't know that schedule is going to turn out the way it is. You got the Giants, you got Washington, and then you got a high school team from Miami. So, for me, what I would do, Jenna, is I would work him back gradually because I don't want him to get hurt. I want him to get ready for that next two-game stretch being New Orleans and Green Bay.
Yep.
So, what I would do is I might have him a few more touches, but I want people to see another 60 to 70 plays of Kellen Moore in that passing game, John Kitna, his impact on Dak as a passer, because I'm just going to tell you, you put enough film out there with guys running wide open and hitting guys down the field, the NFL will adjust. So by the time they need Zeke to be able to go back and grind it out, they would have enough video and the young players, especially Michael Gallup and some of the other players, Randall Cobb's not a young player, but they would have tremendous confidence as you get into the meat of the schedule. So they got a unique opportunity, and I would take advantage of it. After seeing that film last week, seeing the route combinations, I put another two games out there very strong. So, yes, he might touch the ball another 3 to 5 times more, but it wouldn't be as physical as I'm used to. And a lot of those might be in the passing game.
And I don't often say this, but I almost feel like you were cheating off my paper there, see? Because I agree with you 1,000%.
I can't cheat. I'm sitting in the front next to the teacher. I'm the teacher's pet.
Okay, no problem.
I ain't looking on nobody's paper.
Because it does have to do with the schedule. If this were, if they had weeks 4 and 5 and weeks 2 and 3, if it was New Orleans, Green Bay, these next two games, instead of Washington, Miami, my answer would likely be different. Because then I don't think Dallas's best offense, no matter how well Dak plays, is one where Zeke touches the ball 13 to 17 times. I think their best offense is one where Zeke touches the ball 20 to 25 times, because he is still, week one notwithstanding, their best player. But what is best for the Cowboys in a very winnable road game is for Dak and the passing game to try to continue this momentum, to try to continue feeling great about themselves. And you mentioned Kellen Moore, and obviously Kellen Moore had some really nice adjustments. They did a lot more pre-snap motion. They did a lot more play action week one than they were doing last year. But if you go back and watch the big plays, a lot of those plays had no play action. A lot of those plays had no window dressing pre-snap. Those big plays, the biggest of them were Dak Prescott dropping back and firing dimes to not necessarily even wide open receivers. There was one play where there was a clear miscommunication, the tight end touchdown to Jarwin, where Ogletree and someone else, clearly somebody didn't do their job and he was wide open. But it was Dak Prescott with precision and accuracy with the game on his shoulders. So if you can duplicate that, you obviously, the number one goal is to win, but if you can have, you know, your cake and eat it too, to use a cliche, if you can win winning that way, where Dak again continues this momentum, where Zeke can ease himself into it, because holdout notwithstanding, there was one thing during the holdout Jerry Jones said that was accurate. We do want Zeke peaking at the end of the season. We don't want to overuse Zeke at the beginning of the season to where he is worn out by the end of the season if they are going to be a playoff team. So for all those reasons, I agree wholeheartedly with Chris. See if Dak can do it again, and see if by the time you get to Saints Packers, if when they're game planning for you, they're like, geez, can we put 8 in the box? Can we defend the Cowboys the way we have the last couple years?
Yeah, and just because Zeke wants a heavier workload doesn't mean Kellen Moore is going to game plan a larger workload for Ezekiel Elliott. But Nick, you said something interesting. If games 4 and 5 were games 1 and 2, maybe this decision would be different. Also, had the Cowboys lost to the Giants, maybe things would be different and there'd be more pressure to get him in. But they have the luxury and the comfort now of having seen what Dak Prescott could do in an offense that was able to succeed without relying too heavily on the run game. Yeah, run it back. Try to do that again and then ease him in.
And let's not forget, Kellen Moore's only been in one NFL game calling plays. Let's let him get some reps. I'm not as concerned about Zeke and his ability to be effective as I am about Kellen Moore when we get in highly contested games, when he's calling plays against Sean Payton. Man, I mean, that's a huge advantage to the New Orleans Saints. But as we grow throughout the season, and I know through talking to one of Dallas staff members, they were pleasantly surprised at the rhythm for which Kellen Moore was able to call plays. So, man, these next two games are very important, not only for their young quarterback, but even a younger coordinator, Nick.
And the one other thing that happened in week one that we should mention that I feel like has gone unmentioned throughout the weeks up to this point was Travis Frederick's return showed up. It showed up on the stat sheet, and it showed up on film. Of all the games played on Sunday, no quarterback was pressured less as a percentage than Dak Prescott. When you're pressured less than 10% of your dropbacks, you are going to have high-level success, particularly with the receiving core working the way it did. And so Tyron Smith played well, that entire offensive line, but you could see they got their all-pro center back for the first time in over a year with Travis Frederick in week one.
But in watching week number one, be careful. Jay Gruden had Washington prepared. They had Philly on the ropes. Jenna was texting people, there go Casey, there go Casey.
No, I didn't.
Case Keenum, that's her guy. There go Casey.
I did.
I said, Jenna, he good for half a season or half a game.
I took it back.
You must have been conflicted. You had your Super Bowl pick on one side.
I know, and Case Keenum
NFL crush on the other.
No, but it's true. Case Keenum And Washington did have Philly a little nervous there in the early half of that game, and they might be able to do the same for the Cowboys, pressure on them to get out to a
Right, and the reason why I mentioned that is you don't want to take teams for granted. As to say, oh, you know something, it's like we'll work Zeke in there slowly. Or, you know something, no, you need to know this is a divisional game.
Right.
You get 2-0 in your division. You're on the road. It's the first time this team is going on the road. The formula to being successful is I need to win at least half of my road games. I go 7-1. At home.
And you're 11-5.
And you're looking good. So for me, it becomes important in this rare three-game window, developing my passing game, creating film out there that the NFL realizes that, oh, Dallas is throwing the ball a lot like they had done the previous 9 games, Nick, because we can't forget how effective Dak and Amari were the second half of the season.
And real quick, you mentioned Dallas going on the road for the first time. The flip side of that is home opener for Washington. So a little extra juice for Washington in that regard after being on the road in week one, coming home and seeing what they can do.
Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 World's Most Ethical Companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for your future or visit www.pacificlife.com. All right, time for us to go viral. Kyler Murray and the Cardinals are preparing to take on Lamar Jackson and the Ravens Sunday on Fox. See, you'll be in Baltimore on the call. Check out this image that the Cardinals tweeted with the caption, "Learning from the best," showing Kyler looking at an employee of the year wall with
Are those all Larry
Fitzgeralds?
15 years in a row.
15 years in a row?
Yeah, they need to sell him a piece of the team.
You got the money. You're right about that.
15 years in a row.
15.
That's great.
None of those years, Jenna, did he wear a watch on the field.
Oh,
because if he would have, Jenna,
oh my God,
I would have flown wherever he was and snatched him by his dreadlocks, drug him off the field. Boy, I have taught you better. Your mama taught you better. Your daddy taught you better.
Man,
15 years in a row, Jenna.
All right.
And OBJ's
also NFL Man of the Year, something some other people will never get.
Okay.
Well, he could flame
Congrats
you.
To Fitzy. By the way,
you can't represent him.
I'm not
because he's too
him.
Much straight down the middle.
Oh, by the way, I mentioned to your good friend and former coach and offensive coordinator Brian Billick what a hard and fast stance you're taking on diva wide receiver behavior. He had a few comments about.
Yeah, what did he say? Go ahead. Give me the most diva thing I've ever done.
Well, I can't speak.
Yeah. Oh, I had a Mercedes 1000.
Yeah, no, that's a rich person thing. That's not a diva thing.
You can't be a diva receiver unless you're rich.
Right. Agreed. Now we're having.
You know, because when AB was broke,
what
was
about?
It? Hard working. Oh, I'm here. And then what happened? Call God.
Stories to start your morning this now. Guy. Dak Prescott.
Congrats to Fitzy.
Dak Prescott was named the NFC's Offensive Player of the Week after his monster opening win over the Giants. 400 passing yards, 4 touchdowns. Nick, has Dak taken that next step?
Well, I mean, he did in week one.
Uh-oh, come on.
What do you
Give
mean?
It up, man.
Well, in week one. Week one does not make
you
a season.
You and Shannon are slow on Dak. Oh, Dak, come on, give it up.
In week
what
one,
what else the guy
got to
do?
No, do it again. He doesn't, I mean, again. What he has to do is, again, now he doesn't have to be that good again, but here's what Dak needs to do in week two. Just don't take a step backwards. Just stay where you're at, and it will be progress because he took 3 steps forward in week one. So if he just stays there, he's still ahead of pace. But no, I can't say he's taking the next step yet, but he seems to be on his way.
This is the thing, Jenna. If people, it depends on if they like the player or not. If you missed the last half of last season, you'd be like, yeah, Dak took a step the first week. But if you watched the last half of last season, you're like, man, he's up and running now. This ain't no baby steps. We have a second half of last year. He had Amari. They have a whole training camp together. They add Randall Cobb. He looks excellent. They give him time, and he continues to step into his throws. Don't only watch where he's looking, but watch when he comes off to the one, to the two, to the three. That's after talking to members of the staff. That's what he's doing better than he's ever done before.
All right, moving on to Deshaun Watson. He almost led the Texans to a last-minute win over the Saints, but sadly, almost don't count in the NFL. Watson's heroics led to some high praise from Hall of Famer Brett Favre. Favre said that Watson has ice water in his veins. See, what do you think of Favre's comments?
It's true, but it just didn't start when he got to the Texans. Nope. Go back and check him out. When he was in Georgia playing football in high school, you go to Clemson, he's got one of the great records against the University of Alabama, Nick Saban. As far as individual player, who was the most successful over their college career? And that guy right there would be at the head of the class. So what he's doing in the NFL is what Nick and a lot of other people expected, even though he dropped a little bit in the draft. He's missed 9 games in his tenure there with the Texans and has only 7 quarterbacks have more winning drives than him.
Only 7 quarterbacks have more game winning drives over the last 2 years, to Chris's point. And he's only played a season and a half of football. He has been, and it does go back to Clemson. I don't know if college football does an official all-decade team, but if they did, for me, he would be the quarterback of the 2010s. And we've had some great quarterbacks come through college football in the 2010s because of what he showed you in the biggest moments. And he has continued that into his NFL career. Hopefully, he gets some help this week up front against a ferocious Jags pass rush.
And very few of them look like a Heisman Trophy winner. Once they got to the league, he instantly looked like one.
All right, moving on to some news out of L.A. Phillip Rivers will be without his tight end, Hunter Henry. Henry suffered a left knee injury, reportedly expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. Nick, how big of a blow is this to the Chargers?
It's a blow for the Chargers. By the way, I would be shocked if he only misses 4 to 6 weeks. A tibial plateau fracture is an injury that has knocked people out for the season before, and the Chargers are kind of known to soft-pedal the injuries. I remember Joey Bosa last year. He was going to be ready by preseason game 3, and he wasn't ready until into the season. Chargers seem to, of all the organizations in sports, have the worst injury luck, if it is luck, year after year. Hunter Henry, after blowing his ACL last year, now having this injury this year, it's brutal.
Unfortunate for him. A promising young player has suffered significant injuries early in his career. And this is the kind of guy, they don't watch out. Some people on their, when they're reviewing the games, are going to get him screwed up.
Oh, come on. How are you going to do that to your friend? That ain't right. That's a good throwback to last season.
I talked to him the other day. He's straight, man.
Okay.
All my friends know
I'll flame him. That makes us friends.
That's a fact.
Oh, I feel so much better. Cam Newton and the Panthers host Jameis Winston and the Bucks on the NFL Network. Both teams coming off tough season opening losses, but for very different reasons. Unlike the Bucks, the Panthers really just need a few tweaks as they sit 6.5-point favorites in this one. That according to Fox Bet. Chris Carter, what needs to happen for the Panthers to pick up their first win of the season tonight?
I'm going to be looking at Cam Newton, but I'm going to be looking through him, looking at that Carolina defense. Because when they've been good, they've been a top 10 defense. Didn't look like that last week against the Rams. Got gouged in the running game. I look for them to try to force a lot of turnovers with Jameis, put a lot of pressure on him early, because they have high expectations inside that locker room. And that defense has high aspirations. They know not only does Cam have to be healthy and playing well, but that defense, it's got to be playing at a championship level for them to reach their full potential next.
And for the Carolina Panthers, tonight starts the most critical stretch of their season. And by that I mean over the next 6 weeks, they play 5 teams last year that won 5 or fewer games. If they are going to go on a run, it starts tonight, and it goes from now until about Halloween, when they could really put themselves in the similar position they were in last year at 6-2 midway through the season, for a promising season last year that I believe only got derailed by Cam's shoulder injury. You talked about the defense. I want to talk about the offense, because Cam joked about it in the press conference, like, Norv Turner's got Christian McCaffrey on his fantasy team. But the things that have made Cam Newton special, the things that have made Cam Newton an MVP in this league, he was not allowed to do in week 1. no deep balls thrown, and essentially no runs. He ran the ball, what, two times in that football game? So are you – I understand using Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey right now, until Cam gets fully back to himself, might be the best player on that team. But you've got to let Cam unleash it a few times, and you've got to let Cam on some RPOs or some design quarterbacks runs get out and run the football, because that adds an element to the offense that was lacking in week one.
And not to make excuses for Cam, but in week number one, especially going against the Rams, you have to know who you're going against. Aaron Donald, we're going to double team him every play. He's in the spot that has the direct line to the quarterback. So right now, what we're starting to see in the NFL, and last season, Aaron Donald led the way with 20 sacks. We're starting to see more talented players play defensive tackle. So now they're able to get to the quarterback. So if you try to have a lot of quick sets and everything, that guy can still get to the quarterback. And I can't throw the ball deep and hold the ball while Aaron Donald is playing. So when I have an Aaron Donald on the field, my deep passing game, it's going to be negated. I'm going to try to get rid of it, and someone's going to have to make some people miss to be able to run off with it. Now, tonight's game, and let's not forget what happened a couple weeks ago against New England. Cam got banged up, missed a couple weeks. So now I got Cam out there the first week. I'm not getting ready to have him run the ball with him having a leg or foot injury that he sustained in that New England game. So he might be healthier in week number two. I believe it's going to be all out to try to win, so they'll do whatever they have to do. But we have to, if they're going to reach their potential, Cam still got to be a pocket passer. He still got to be accurate. And can he hold up his new fundamentals when they rush him, especially when they rush him and have bodies right in front of him where he can't step? And when he can't step, typically his fundamentals leave him.
Bart Scott was on the show yesterday. He made a joke. How do you beat, you know, a team like the Bucs? Well, just make sure Jameis gets the ball in some capacity. How much of this game is going to come down to the Panthers just not making mistakes, playing within their game, and letting the Bucs go out and
I think
lose?
It's a great point, is that the Carolina has to play a clean game in this game. Week one, they turned the ball over three times. That's how you lose a game, despite blocking a punt that sets up a touchdown, despite picking off Jared Goff once yourself, is you lose the turnover battle like that. And one other point to this football game, Gerald McCoy, who for the better part of a decade might have been the best player on the Tampa Bay Bucs, was somewhat unceremoniously cut this offseason. They then instantly gave his number away. He signed with Carolina. He goes back to he gets to take on Tampa Bay tonight as, I think, potentially the best player on that Panthers defensive line. So watch for Gerald McCoy tonight getting after Jameis.
Chris Canty is here. Chris, thanks for being with us and being a part of our
good
family
to be here.
Drama mm-hmm. every
good
day.
To be here. Let's get to it.
Good Eagles call. In Thank Atlanta you. Sunday night to face the Falcons.
He's no
Philly
amateur.
Overcame a slow start to pick up a key divisional win last week over Washington. They know they can't do that again this week against the Falcons, even though slow starts sort of became their theme last season. They ranked dead last in first quarter points in 2018. Their head coach, Doug Peterson, knows it. And knows the test that lies ahead in the Falcons.
I mean, it's a solid defense. When you look at them, you know, that's why you can't go off of last week, because we know this defense. I mean, it's another good test for us offensively. It comes down to execution, how well we prepare this week. But this is a playoff caliber team with a playoff caliber defense.
All right, Chris Caney, what do you think the key will be for this game?
I think if you talk to both Doug Peterson and Dan Quinn, they would tell you that they want to start a lot faster than they did. You look at what happened with the Eagles in their game against the Redskins. They didn't score their first points until right around 4 minutes before halftime. At that point, the Redskins already put up 17 points on the board, but they shook off the rust. A lot of their starters didn't play throughout the course of the preseason, and they were able to get on a roll. They scored on every single drive from that point on, with the exception of one. The Atlanta Falcons, that's a different story. I mean, that game looked ugly. They went up to Minnesota and got mollywopped by the Vikings.
Are the Vikings real good? We got to watch out now.
Well, no. I'm not saying that the Vikings aren't good. I'm just saying that they got a beat down up in Minnesota.
Yes.
That's exactly what happened. It didn't look like they were prepared. Mm-hmm. They got a couple of touchdowns late in that game, but that was garbage time. Minnesota had already scored 28 points. If you look at the Atlanta Falcons' first possessions, they had block, punt, interception, punt, fumble, punt, halftime, interception, punt, and then, of course, the last two touchdowns. But if you look at all all of the turnovers.
That's a disaster.
If you look at all of the turnovers, the Minnesota Vikings scored points on all of the turnovers. They capitalized on those opportunities. And when you look at what that defensive front did to Matt Ryan, I mean, after the first play of the game, Matt Ryan is picking himself up after Anthony Barr sacks him. The interception that he threw in the first quarter, that was forced by Danny Hunter in the pressure. And so at some point, the Atlanta Falcons, that offensive line that they invested in, that offensive line that they have five first-round draft picks, including this year's two first-round draft picks, Lindstrom and McGarry, they're going to have to step up and block.
When you first said that. You said that a couple weeks ago. The only line with five first-round – I'm like, what? Five first-round picks? And they haven't had a good offensive line. So you're talking about a key to the game up front. That Minnesota – Minnesota got after them. And Dalvin Cook, run defense or lack of run defense. Now, Grady Jarrett for Atlanta played well. He was outstanding. He stayed in Minnesota's backfield. But when you only force Kirk Cousins to throw the ball 10 times, how you going to win that game? So that game from the beginning, Minnesota was playing at a different level. But if they can't rush the passer, that being the Falcons, how are you going to be able to negate Carson Wentz, walk it to him Wentz? That's what my man Shannon. Shannon said he throws such a pretty ball, he can just walk it to him. And so you got to be able to get after him and get him off his spot early.
And yesterday I mentioned the six teams that are 0-1 that have to be really concerned about how they played in week one. I understand there's 15 teams in the league that are 0-1, but there were six teams that it's like, wait, is there anything from game tape we can take from the game? Is there any positive? The Falcons were one of those six where it's like, no, not really. We didn't really do anything well. And they were only one of three who have real expectations. Other teams on the list were like the Giants, who we know are rebuilding, the Dolphins, who we know are rebuilding. Atlanta, though, better be careful here. It can get late early in that division and that conference. And when you – I understand the struggle of having your first game of the year be against Minnesota, second game of the year be against Philly, but this is a Philly team that you have played each of the last 2 years, once in the playoffs, once to start the season. Each of the last 2 years, your defense has played really well, holding them under 20 points. Granted, both of those games were without Carson Wentz in the lineup. They were Nick Foles was the starting quarterback for Philadelphia. I understand that. And both of those games, you had a chance to win it at the very end, down less than a touchdown, first and goal, and you couldn't punch it in. If Atlanta starts this year 0-2 and then has at Indy next week, it's going to be another season where it's like, wait, look at the talent on offense. Look at how good we think this team can be. What's wrong with them? And so for the Falcons, to me, it's a critical, critical moment, and it's an opportunity for them to remind people they should be included amongst the contenders in the NFC.
And every team that doesn't follow the Falcons, you need to know, they're the only team that kept their head coach but changed all other three coordinators. Mm-hmm. Changed their special teams coordinator, changed the defense coordinator, changed their offensive coordinator. So, yeah, they got some of the same players that we talk about and everything, but the lack of continuity, it happens to be there. This is a team to watch as far as one of the more talented teams that this year – are they even a 500 team if they get off that 0-2 start?
And to that end, CC, you bring up the switch with all of the coordinators. I'm still trying to figure out what the identity of this Atlanta Falcons team is. I mean, I brought up the draft picks because when you look at draft capital, it would give you some insight into what they want the identity of that team to be. But the Atlanta Falcons just haven't been that. Look at their offense. Look at all the first-round draft picks that they have on their team. Not just the offensive line. Julio Jones, Calvin Ridley, all of these guys. Matt Ryan. Those guys have got to be able to step up. They've got to be able to do something with the ball in the early part of the game. You only get the ball 10 to 12 times in a game. I mean, to start the way that they did in Minnesota, that's unacceptable. And so that team is going to have to play a lot more physical if they want a chance to be competitive in this Eagles game.
Eagles didn't start that great either, which, like I said earlier, is a theme carried over from last year. How do they do that? How do they pick up getting DeSean Jackson involved early? How do they come out firing unlike what they did last week?
Well, if I'm Philadelphia, as great as DeSean Jackson was throughout this game and as good as Carson Wentz and the offense was after the first quarter and a half, really, I want to see if Atlanta can stop my running game. They have three, to me, more than competent running backs in Philadelphia. We just saw Atlanta get run all over. I want to start there. I want to start with my offensive line against that undersized defensive front that is used to, that is built to play with the lead and to play fast and try to gouge them the way Atlanta did, the way the Vikings did. And then, once I have the running game going, that's when I try to hit him over the head with DeSean Jackson. That's when I try to hit him with the deep shots, and that's when I try to have Carson Wentz be more of
almost the reverse of what a lot of teams do, which is try to get the lead passing game early, salt it away with the run game late, have a heavy dose of the running game if you're Philadelphia early, and then allow that to open things up for Aguilar and for Ertz and, of course, for DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, when you're on an explosive team like Philadelphia, I've been on a lot of teams like this, and you start talking as far as offensive players, how important every time you get the football as an individual. And the reason why is it's important that Alshon is successful, because if he's not successful, he dropped the ball, I'll throw it to D-Jack. I'll throw it to Ertz. I got other guys that I can go to. So for me, going into week number two, you can never think you know what's going to happen. So you can't go out there and say, you know something, Atlanta, they got run on last week. You know something, we're going to run on them. In the NFL, what happens? Man, they put their big boy pads on and something, you're like the film, you're like, where'd they come from? Now they're stopping the run. So don't have your mind made up. Philadelphia, it's a blank script every week. They should be able to gouge you with the running game and the passing game. But if I'm Carson Wentz, if I'm Doug Peterson, every day I'm going out there with the confidence that I can carve you apart throwing this football. And I don't believe that their secondary, especially their safeties interiorly, can match up with the interior passing game, Zach Ertz, and what they can do going down the middle of the field with the Philadelphia Eagles.
All right, we got to take a break. Kenny, stick around. Coming up, what do Big Ben and the Steelers need to do to beat Seattle? That's next on First Things First.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We're talking Steelers. They were handed a rude awakening in their week one blowout loss to the Patriots. But our guys over at Fox Bet think Pittsburgh will get their first win of the season this weekend. They've got them as 4.5-point favorites to beat Russell Wilson and the Seahawks. Ben Roethlisberger knows his team struggled last week, but says they're ready to get back out there.
It's not like all of a sudden we have to go back to the drawing board and start, you know, doing this, just, you know, scratching everything, crossing everything out. Where do we go from here? It's just, we all need to, starting with myself, play better. And it's nothing drastic on anybody's plate. It's just little things here, little things there. I told the guys on Monday when we came in here, you know, we're out doing our run and stuff, and I said, hey guys, look up. So the sun's still shining, the sky's still blue. And the best thing is, we still get to play on Sunday.
All right, Chris Canty, is Big Ben right? Is it just a few tweaks here and there for the Steelers to get back on track?
Well, after you lose by 30 in your first game, it's more than just a few tweaks here or there. Now, I don't want to overreact, but the Pittsburgh Steelers, that performance was inexcusable. And when you look at the defensive side of the ball, they got a lot of work that they got to do, especially with their pass coverage. They're trying to get back on the winning track. They ain't going to do that unless they put a little more pressure on Russell Wilson than they were able to on Tom Brady on Sunday night. I mean, it's going to take more than one sack. Since the beginning of 2017, no quarterback in the NFL has more touchdown passes than Russell Wilson. You saw in that Cincinnati game, a lot of the plays that they were able to use to set up the touchdown drives, that was because of Russell Wilson getting chunk plays in the passing game. You had a 44-yard touchdown pass to Tyler Lockett, the 42-yarder to DK Metcalf, another 25-yarder to him. Mm-hmm. I mean, and those were one-on-one man coverage situations. Even when Cincinnati lined up in zone, at some point in the down, zone turns into man, and you got to be able to cover somebody. And so the Pittsburgh Steelers have got to clean that part of it up in order to try to have some success. But in part, rush and coverage have to work together. And so if you're not putting more pressure on the quarterback, then the quarterback is going to have more time and more opportunities
and
to make accurate throws down the field. And that's the part of it that the Steelers got to get right. If they don't do that, they won't have a chance on Sunday.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. The defense needs to play better, but they also scored the fewest points of any team in the league this weekend. They were the only team, I believe, to not score a touchdown this weekend. Their offense was – their offense, if their defense got a D, their offense got an F. Now, maybe both sides of the ball get an F and a 33-3 loss. But for me
– I think if you still get a D, you got to repeat that class, though.
Yeah.
No. You don't have to repeat a class.
If it's in your major, you got to get at least a C or above.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, all right, okay. Well, listen, you're talking about to stay
eligible.
Collegiate
technicalities
teams.
From
regardless,
Chris
Garner. The point
had to
being
be right.
Okay. Regardless, the point being that the Steelers' offense, which has been the reliable part of this team the last half decade was nowhere to be found. And that, to me, is an even bigger concern going up against Seattle than their defense is. Seattle's going to run the ball on the line of scrimmage 25 times irrationally and then ask Russell Wilson to make some magic. That's what they did in the playoff game. It's what they did last year. It's what they did throughout last season and the beginning of this season. But that won't matter if you slow that down, if your offense does not get on track. And I'm not trying to overreact to week one from James Conner, but how about the last 10 weeks from James Conner, where he has averaged 44 yards per game rushing the football? If they don't have a reliable running back, when we know, to me, they only have one reliable wide receiver, that offense is going to be in trouble all year long, no matter who they play, much less playing a defensive front that the front seven in Seattle, the back end might not be what it once was, but that front seven in Seattle, I think, is excellent. You already saw the impact from Clowney. We know they have Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright. So that's my focus going into this game for Pittsburgh, is how can the offense get back on track after a miserable performance in week one against New England?
Yeah, but it starts up front. I don't believe James Conner is part of the problem. I don't believe they got enough touches, enough first downs to be able to get, because James Conner and Jalen Samuels, both of those guys should be touching the ball an awful lot. But the Pittsburgh Steelers, where do you spend your money? They spent it on quarterback, and that's the only place that you can say they got an identity. Cam Hayward, he's going to take you out of the running game. He's going to take a double team. Besides that, Watt hadn't proven himself as a throughout the season that he can rush the passer consistently. So what do they have? This is Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger. No need to be blaming anything. No need to talk about their receiving core. Oh, Juju's only 22. James Washington, he's only 23. Like, I don't expect them to be dynamic. But Mike Tomlin, I do expect him to come up with a competent defense for the personnel that you do have. I don't know if they're a 34 team. I don't know if they're a 43 team. I don't know if they're a zone blitz team. I know they can't play man-to-man because their secondary is bad. Their safeties were awful. But I'm just going to tell you, Pete Carroll is not in love with his wide receiving core. How Nick's not in love with how they call plays, because Pete Carroll, he called Drew Rosenhaus last week. He was trying to get AB to have AB in this game. So their wide receiving core, DK Metcalf, he was hurt during training camp. He came back. He looked really good his first game. Now, Lockett as a deep threat, they are going to miss Doug Baldwin. He was the, him and Russell, the heart and soul, the teeth, the physicality of that offense. So for me, if I'm Pittsburgh, let's blitz Russ. Let's play some man-to-man. Their wide receiving core is not that dynamic to be able to show some people that we got some punch in this defense, hadn't had punch in a couple years.
Yeah, I think you got to cut the head off the snake. You got to go after Russell Wilson. That's where it starts. And that's why there needs to be such an emphasis on this Pittsburgh Steelers front, being able to put pressure on the quarterback. That's my biggest concern when it comes to the Steelers. With the offensive side of the ball, I have confidence that they'll be able to figure it out. Big Ben, this ain't his first rodeo. He's got two Super Bowls for a reason. Like, we know that Big Ben is one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the National Football League. Like, he's going to have to elevate the play of everybody around him, and I believe that he will do so. I mean, coming off of games where he doesn't have any touchdown passes, he's 23-6. That's his record. So I think that Big Ben understands that a lot of what happens on the offensive side of the ball is going to be on his shoulders, especially after the offseason where you moved on from Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell. Now, your concerns about the run game are valid, but there have always been concerns about the run game in Pittsburgh. I mean, you look at the last several seasons, they haven't run the ball very well. There were only a couple of teams last year that were worse at running the football than the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right, but that...
So I hear you in terms of wanting to try to provide some balance, but ultimately this is going to come down to Big Ben being able to make some plays.
But you mentioned they're 23-6 after a game where he doesn't throw a touchdown pass. The lion's share of that must be a very long time ago, because it has been since week five of the season before last, the 2017 season, since Big Ben had a game where he didn't throw a touchdown pass. And you mentioned he's been to two Super Bowls for a reason. I understand that. But the first Super Bowl he got to, they had a great defense. The second Super Bowl he got to, he had a good defense and a very good offense. This is the toughest ask, in my opinion, of Big Ben's career. This is the least overall talent he's had on the roster. Every season he's played in the NFL, he's had at least one of the following three, if not two or all three. An elite defense, a true number one elite wide receiver, or a great running back. In fact, he's played in front of one Hall of Fame running back, another guy in Le'Veon Bell, who was on a All-Pro trajectory, mm-hmm. depending on longevity, Hall of Fame trajectory. He's right now he's 0 for 3 in those categories, mm-hmm. not through his fault.
Right.
That's roster construction, but that's why the job for him is so difficult this
but
year.
But the good quarterbacks make those guys.
Of course.
I mean, what has Mike Wallace done since then? Emmanuel Sanders had a couple good years with Peyton Manning, but mm-hmm. Ben Roethlisberger made those guys. He made A.B. It wasn't the flip side. Oh, these wide receivers, they made him. And I know you mentioned James Conner worried about him. If you're worried about the passing game, you need to be worried about Dante Moncrief.
Yeah.
If you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan and you throw the ball to him 10 times, I've been watching Moncrief for a while. I know a little bit about wide receivers, even though Nick think I don't. Mm. Moncrief is my concern.
Yeah.
If you talk about the offense, if you're going to target him 10 times, man, you are not going to throw a whole bunch of touchdowns.
And Moncrief passes. Came out yesterday and said it was the worst game of his career, talked about how poorly he played.
He ain't had no great career. Thanks for telling me. Oh, it's the worst game of my career. Give me 5 great games you had. Yeah, I'm glad you showed up
True
to the
story.
Press conference because you didn't show up against New England.
You guys wow.
Take
a break.
10 targets.
Smoke. We'll see you a little bit later. Coming up, does Kyler Murray need to play more like Lamar Jackson? That's next on First Things First.
Man, send some of them over to James Washington, man.
Dante Martin.
Hey, Ray, change
not
that, man.
Not a fan of this show.
All right, we'll get to Kyler and Lamar in a second. But first, right here in New York, there's James Harden showing off the 1 foot sidestep move he's been working on all summer.
Now, what's he trying to accomplish on this? I don't understand.
Remove the threat of the travel on his step back three. People last year were saying it was a travel. Now he's not landing before he does it. That's what he's
trying
to
accomplish.
He's doing it for us. It's no, he's going to do that in games.
Well, to
year.
Me, it's not going to get him that wide open. Danny Green is still right there on his shot. Like,
No. It's not necessarily because the separation is created by the step back. It's to remove the ability of the ref to call the travel on him. I'm just telling you. I didn't teach it to him. You asked me the question,
I
answered.
I'm just watching basketball.
Shout out to our friend Enos Kanter, friend of the show.
Oh, he was
he
in there?
That highlight.
Yeah, he's on defense watching.
Yep,
next,
correct.
Pro dunk of Jake Clark, the jumper, throwing down. This is an incredible off the dribble, under the legs, through the hoop, nothing but net.
The catch was amazing. Right hand through his legs, catches it with his right, goes back through his legs to his left. Oh, that's nasty. Commissioner, let's do this, man. Open competition. I need these street guys versus the NBA guys. All right?
$1 million
NBA
cash
All-Star.
At center court.
Yeah, or half of Nick's salary, whichever one's greater.
Oh.
Interesting.
Is that what's happening here?
Oh, Jenna. please.
Dunks.
Come on.
Look
we in year three,
here.
Jenna.
Dwan Walker is holding the ball between his feet in a standing position. Look.
Well, Jenna, tell us about
impressive.
This. Tell us about the explosion, the athleticism.
Do you know,
this
if
takes.
You're not running and you're just starting from that position, how much momentum you
who's
can
gotta
generate
create all the power?
On your own, you yourself, your lower abs, lifting your legs up and getting the height
on a
to
running,
go up
on
there?
A running
yeah,
dunk.
Yeah, Nick, hold abs. It's the place
real
between
on
your
a running
chest and
dunk,
your waist.
Your legs.
Who has to generate it on a running dunk?
Who?
Yeah, because you said. Yeah. Same person, right?
Same person.
No.
Different part of the body, Nick. Different part of the body.
Oh, okay, got it. I don't know. I
once
don't know
you get
things.
Muscles, Nick, uh-huh. you're going to
oh.
know that they feel different.
Oh.
Whoa. Yeah,
Oklahoma High School football. Carl Albert's Javian Trailer making a great one-handed diving catch.
Javian Trailer. I was totally lost on this one because I actually thought it was a white kid catching it.
That
and then I heard the name.
Yeah.
Then I'm like, okay. Either they got some style there in Oklahoma. What? What? Speak. Go
nothing,
ahead.
Man. I got
come on, man. You're supposed to be a smart guy.
Come on.
You're
don't
I'm being told not to.
Don't
use one of those
it,
words
Jenna.
From the word club.
Here we go.
Anyone can be named Javion, man. It works for everybody. That's a great name.
Oh, Visa, let's do this.
That's what we waited for?
No, I centered myself again.
For Where Would You Like to Be, sponsored by Visa, everywhere you want to be, and CCU will actually be at the Cardinals-Ravens game in Baltimore, calling the game for Fox. This weekend, you'll get to see the dynamic Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson facing off in person. Yesterday, Lamar was with us on First Things First and had this advice for Kyler.
Just be yourself. You know, he's a great player, man. I watched him. You know, he was number one dual threat when I came out of high school. Man, him came out at the same time. He's a great quarterback. So, man, just be you and ball out.
Be you and ball out. I like it. See, what are your expectations for Kyler and Lamar Sunday on Fox?
It should be a tremendous matchup for young kids coming into the league. Their styles, just because both of them are dual threats, they're at just different points in their life. Kyler is a true pocket passer who's 5'10 and is a great athlete. Lamar is a great athlete who has had one game where he sat in the pocket and is trying to work to one day to be a pocket passer. Both of them very, very excited in their own right. Lamar, first of all, he's on the better football team. He's a lot more composed than he was last year. If you look at that last third of the season and then the playoffs, that was great experience for him. But he's got that institutional talent around him. Not being wide receivers, not being things like that yet, but he's got people in that organization that are supporting him as far as what they tell him, what they want him to be. Don't listen to any outside influence. That's why he keeps repeating, be yourself. Because that's what John Harbaugh, and I would be willing to have a debate about this. I believe Jim Harbaugh is a good coach, but I believe John Harbaugh is just as good. And he does a great job preparing his team, and they attack Miami. Miami from the kickoff. Now, Miami had 15 new players that were added that week. People talk about Miami tanking. Yes, but Baltimore went out there and just took the fight out of the Miami Dolphins. That's why that game was so lopsided. And some of the things they've added this season for Lamar, as far as play action pass, RPOs, where they put Hollywood on the inside slant to be able to create some big plays. It's going to be interesting to watch them going forward to see how his passing develops over the course of the season, Nick.
All right, so for Arizona, the first, second, and third key to this game is going to be, are going to be, can you keep Kyler Murray clean? Can you prevent him from being under constant duress? Because the numbers in week one were jarring. He was pressured on 11 dropbacks in week one, see? Those 11 dropbacks resulted in 5 sacks, an interception, 1 of 6 passing, and 0 yards. If he was pressured, he was dead. He was finished. And by the way, the player who had what? No passes batted down his last year in college football, or only 2 passes. He all of a sudden, passes were getting batted down left and right.
Well, for one, the defensive linemen are so much smarter in the pros, especially the defensive tackles. Now, most of his passes, and this is going to be a challenge for the coach there, Cliff Kingsbury, to be able to design less things. Tom Brady, if you tell Tom Brady the whole game's on the line, where you want to throw the ball? I want to throw it right down the middle because he can look and see over everything. It's the most open part of the defense. If you ask Kyler where those passes get batted down, going right over the middle because the defensive tackles of Detroit, they gave up rushing. They made eye contact with him, and when he was ready to throw, you could see they were getting their hands, and 5'10 makes a big difference when you're playing quarterback, and you could see that in game number one.
How do you get around that?
Well,
this is the big question that was coming into this season.
In the beginning, you can roll him out some, you can do quicker throws, but what you really have to do is just prevent him from being under duress. You can give him a clean pocket where instead of the defensive lineman being 2.5 yards away from him, they're 5 yards away from him. That's the best thing you can do. But when Kyler wasn't pressured, he was really good. 28 of 48, 300 yards, couple touchdowns on the comeback. On the flip side, there's Lamar. And we know how great Lamar was in week one. But I do want to give some context for how good Lamar has been since he took over. Chris, you and I don't know if we necessarily agree on this, but what you say all the time, what is the number one statistic for a quarterback in the NFL?
Winning.
Do you get on the winning bus? Lamar took over a team that was 4-5 last year. Since then, they are 7-2, with the 2 losses being to the 12-4 Chiefs on the road in a game they had won until Pat Mahomes did something magical, and to the 12-4 Chargers in a playoff game. So 9 games as a starter, 7 wins, 2 losses last year to the 2 best records in his conference. What he did, by the way, on Sunday, if you care about adjusted yards per attempt, which is kind of a new age stat but a pretty good one, it was the highest in any NFL game in 50 years. The second highest ever to a Johnny Unitas game in 1967. We've had a lot of quarterbacks play bad defenses. We haven't had many quarterbacks ever have a game as efficient and as dynamic deep down the field as Lamar had. And his instant rapport with Hollywood Brown that he talked about yesterday, despite Hollywood missing offseason, missing some training camp, and to have the connection with him on deep passes down the field, that is incredible. That speaks volumes about how good this offense could become if Lamar can continue to evolve.
As far as the question that you asked, how do you adjust? What do you do with Kyler? If you look at Drew Brees, you watch Drew Brees play and you watch Russell Wilson play. when they go to check the ball down or they throw the ball from the center to down the middle of the field, 5 to 10 yards, there are times where they get on their tiptoes and throw the ball. And that's what Kyler, if you watch him in the pocket, almost every time in the pocket when he gets the snap, he makes his drop, he is flat-footed. And 5'10 flat-footed is 5'10. So Drew Brees and them have developed. When I'm going to throw the ball in that area, I know I need a little bit of help. So not only do I need help from the organization in Kingsbury to be able to design things, because it's a real thing. There's a reason why we haven't had a quarterback at 5'10. It's because the linemen, the sight lines, they're very, very difficult. And in the first three quarters of the game, he looked like a short quarterback playing in the NFL, did create momentum in the fourth quarter, finding Larry Fitzgerald and in overtime. But exciting things for Cardinals fans. You do have a franchise quarterback, but you better be able to keep him upright and keep J.R. Sweezy away from him. J.R. Sweezy
sacked him, did like a cross body block.
Yeah, he gets beat, and then he's running back to the quarterback.
That was an unbelievable play.
Yeah. So he's got to avoid both. The defense.
Just a reminder.
Call for that play when you're calling the game on Sunday.
CC will be in the booth calling that game.
Yeah. Call for that play.
Say hi to us while you're there.
No, just
say my name. Shot.
You know we got some promos. Jen, I got you.
Okay.
I got you. Of course.
Thank you. Was it that hard? Was that so much?
You're on live television 15 hours a week.
Much more first things first.
You don't have enough attention?
But his platform is going to be gigantic.
Yeah, Nick doesn't realize that.
Oh, yeah, I don't realize that.
With his baby empire.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.